Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Sports Radio 94 WIP, Tom Kelly, Dan Wilson with you on a Black Friday here. We're taking up till 2:30. Little Black Friday football at that time. Raiders and Chiefs today. Not a great matchup for your Black Football Friday or your Black Friday football.
Not overall great. Like going into it yesterday, not an overall great Thanksgiving slate either. Like the Lions, like the only game with two teams in playoff contention was really the Dolphins and Packers, and even that wasn't that evenly matched. The Lions, like for once, the Lions were actually good, but they got a bad opponent in the Bears, and that Giants-Cowboys game was awful. I was thinking about this recently. Are you surprised at all that, like, I think it is a pretty cool tradition what the NFL has on Thanksgiving. For years, they only did the two games. In 2006, they added the third game at night, but that the Lions and Cowboys, like, it was tradition for, I think, the Lions going back to the 30s, the Cowboys going back to the 60s, always hope, the Lions always at 12:30, Cowboys always at 4:30. Are you surprised that in this day and age of the NFL, where they'll put a national TV game wherever, that they don't, like, at all, that they've, in the year, by the year 2024, we haven't rotated who hosts these games? Like, the NBA on Christmas just puts whoever the best games are. The NFL now on Christmas puts whoever's the best games are. Are you surprised that it's still always the Lions and Cowboys?
I just think that's why they added the third game. Like, they're going
to, just so they could get two more.
They're going to keep the Cowboys there. Cowboys are always going to draw ratings. The Lions, I don't know why the Lions are there. I guess
they were the first one to ever do it. Their owner, like, when they were established, wanted to, like, as like a marketing ploy. It was his idea first.
Well, I guess they, and it's probably worked out pretty well for them. Yeah, I just think that's why they added the third game. They'll just keep it like that forever. I kind of like it.
You like the tradition of it?
Yeah,
like,
I do.
You know, always know the Lions are at 12:30. You always know the Cowboys are 4:30.
It's been a while since the Eagles have played on Thanksgiving. I think the last time they played on Thanksgiving was 15.
Against the Lions when they got killed.
That was hideous.
That might be the best Thanksgiving Day win in Lions history.
And the year before, the Eagles crushed the Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
And then in 2008, they beat the Cardinals. And
Brian Westbrook, four touchdowns
yes,
that game.
They have played in each time slot exactly once since 2000, which is based, you know, both of our lifetimes as an Eagles fan. So, you know, it's always fun. And they've added this Black Friday game now here, too. Last year, I know the Jets hosted it. I forget who they played. This year, it's Raiders Chiefs.
Yeah, last year was Jets Dolphins, I think.
We got to get some better games in these time slots.
Yeah, and the Chiefs, they always play down to their competition, so maybe it'll be close.
So maybe the Raiders will hold them.
Yeah. I like the Ravens plus 13.5 today.
The Raiders plus
13.5. The Raiders, Raiders.
Raiders plus 13.5?
Yeah.
The game's in KC, I believe.
Yep. Aiden O'Connell playing quarterback.
That's your betting on to keep it within two scores?
Hey, I bet on the Chiefs to cover 10.5 at Carolina last week.
And they couldn't do it.
And they couldn't do that. So I'm done. I'm done with them.
So now you're betting the Raiders. Yeah. So that
the Chiefs will win.
The Chiefs will win by three scores because you're doing that now.
Exactly.
Exactly right.
Yeah, that's how it works. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. Obviously talking a lot of Eagles today. How the Eagles stack up with the Lions. Do you feel better about that situation? And if the Eagles had to play an NFC Championship game in Detroit, are you taking the Eagles to win that football game? Would love to get your take on that. Things that have aged poorly is our side topic today. As my kids, they're 2 and 3 years old, 2-year-old daughter, 3-year-old son. They love The Wizard of Oz. 1939, it was made. Still ages 85 years later to where kids like it. And I had them watch it because that new movie Wicked is out. That tells the backstory of the Wicked Witch of the West.
And it's been on Broadway for years. But yeah, now it's in movies.
And I was thinking, okay, maybe I'll take the kids. 2 hours, 45 minutes. I'm not taking the kids that.
That is a long movie.
We'll go see Moana, too.
2 hours and 45 minutes for a movie that's theoretically should be child-friendly?
Yeah.
They might not last 2 hours and 45 minutes. You might not last 2 hours and 45 minutes. That's a long day.
Oh, they're not going 2 hours, 45 minutes. I've never taken them to the movies before, though. But I think this week we'll go see Moana, too.
Oh, this is a first for both of them?
Yeah. They've never been to the movie theater. My son used to be obsessed with Moana, not really anymore. But
okay, you think he'll still be into it?
Yeah, I think they'll be they'll like the movie theater experience. It'll feel like something, you know, cool.
Something new and cool.
Yeah.
That's interesting, because if they, you know, if they get bored, not really a lot of places to go, run around, you got to be quiet. Not always the best place for a young kid.
Yeah. My son, like, loves TV, which is probably not the best thing. My daughter's the one who I worry about, because she just wants to run around.
Run
all
around.
The time.
She's got to be quiet for 2 hours, hour 30, whatever it is.
Yeah, but I might take a chance and do that this week. We'll
okay,
see.
That'll be fun. We'll have to hear more on that.
Yeah, exactly. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. And also, talking about Nick Sirianni, is his game management more of a positive or a negative for the Eagles? I think it's a positive. Buzz thinks it's a negative. I think Nick, overall, makes a lot of the right decisions. I just think we focus on the bad ones. We focus on the wrong ones. Like you're saying, talking about the end of half sequence this past week against the Rams. Not great. I'll admit it. But how many times this year have we seen the Eagles take advantage of that critical middle eight?
I know.
Score,
you're Mr. Middle Eight. I know.
At the end, score at the beginning. But he doesn't get any credit for that.
He's Mr. Middle Eight. Yes, Mr. Football Guy. I know that, but doesn't mean that overall he has made one too many, in my opinion, incorrect. And these are not hindsight bias. I think a lot of times fourth down decisions and whether to go forward on the 2-point conversion, those types of decisions are hindsight bias. I am telling you honestly that there have been a number of times, I don't have them all in front of me, what the exact situation is, where he's either managed the clock in a way that I didn't care for, or had a 2-point conversion where I thought they should have just taken the extra point. I'm not saying you always have to be Mr. Take the Points Guy, but there are situations where it doesn't feel like he's had a feel for the moment. He's tried to overcompensate it. I just don't think he always has the best control or best feel over the game, and that concerns me in a game like this when it's going to be close.
I have confidence in Nick Sirianni that he'll make the right decisions. And I look at it this year, I think there was one game that you can say, yeah, he had a bad game. New Orleans. New Orleans, he was pretty brutal from a game management perspective.
It wasn't the Jags game. I should have.
No, the Jags game is probably the one you're talking about, where they go for the 2-point conversions.
I thought it was bad in the Jags game.
I agreed with a lot of the decision making that game. I really did.
I didn't agree with it in the moment.
I agree with kicking the field goal at the end. You know, the 2-point conversions probably shouldn't have in hindsight, even though, hey, your team executes tush push that much. I get why you would try that when you get the extra yard. But I trust Nick, and I trust his game management decisions. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. We'll get back to the phones in 1 second here. But we do need to look at what happened yesterday, because I've never seen anything like what happened at the end of that Bears-Lions game, where 32 seconds left, Caleb Williams takes a sack, which, first off, you just can't do. The Bears have one timeout. The clock runs down to 6 seconds before they snap it. They throw an incomplete pass and they lose the game.
Yes.
I've never seen anything that bad.
The whole thing was just an unbelievable blunder, breakdown, whatever you want to call it. It was a 52-yard, the second to last snap of the game. If they just kicked the field goal right there, it was a 52-yard kick. As you mentioned, Caleb Williams takes a sack. The timeout needs to be called right then and there. All right, if the timeout's not called right then and there, when you see your team is discombobulated and not getting a playoff in the first, I don't know, 8 seconds, you call a timeout when you realize your team's discombobulated. To let it get down to 6 seconds, it's as if Matt Eberflus, or it's really more so on the coach, but Caleb Williams or anyone on the field wasn't even looking at the clock. It's like they didn't care. It's like they were trying to lose the game and just run it out. I've never seen that happen.
It's the sign of a horribly coached team. And here was Matt Ryan on the CBS postgame show yesterday talking about this sequence.
There's no question. That timeout is going to happen at 32 seconds.
Yeah.
The next play is going to take somewhere between 5 and 7 seconds. You're going to have 25 seconds to run your field goal unit out onto the field. Plenty of time. Plenty of time. This is unacceptable.
Yeah.
From the head coach position, your responsibility is to not panic in critical situations, to put your team in the best opportunity to win games. That's a massive, massive fail by Matt Eberflus.
I mean, it was awful. Just an absolutely awful decision. Here was more. This was from Jimmy Johnson on Fox talking about it.
In 70 years of coaching at all three levels, I've never seen dysfunction that cost a team an opportunity to win the game.
Wow.
Obviously, he's got a rookie quarterback, and different teams do it different way. I handle clock management and timeouts. Sometimes the quarterback and the coach does it. Sometimes the coach has a coach in the box talking to him about clock management. But when Eberflus saw that they were off track and there was dysfunction, he should have called timeout. He says he wanted to communicate to the rookie quarterback, the throw an out route, stop the clock, then call the timeout.
They did not throw
that was
an
never
out
communicated.
Route.
The communication was off.
That
regardless of what the chain of command was, Eberflus has the ability to say, call timeout.
Call timeout.
And I just
70 years, you've never seen anything like it.
Well, I mean, I've never seen anything like it in, you know, 30 plus years.
Yeah.
30 plus. but truly incredible. And what was even more incredible is Matt Eberflus, after this happens, goes to the postgame press conference, and Buzz, you'd imagine that he would express some remorse and take some accountability. Would you not?
Well, that's what we expect out of our head coaches, especially in Philadelphia. In a city like Chicago, hard-nosed sports city, you think they expect that there too?
That's what you'd expect, not what happened. Here's what Eberflus had to say.
So right there, we liked the play that we had, and we were hoping that he was going to call it or you know, get the ball snapped, and then we would have called timeout right there. But once it's under seven there, you know, then you call timeout there, then you're basically throwing the ball to the end zone. Because once it's under 12, you can't throw it inside with no timeout. And it was third going into fourth. You know, so that's a big deal. So it was third going into fourth. That's why we wanted to preserve the timeout.
So how, in retrospect, how should you have handled the final sequence?
Yeah, I like what we did there. Again, once it's under seven, you know, you're gonna call timeout there, or actually under 12, and then really you don't have an option. Because it's third to fourth, you got to throw it into the end zone then. So to me, it's I think we handled it the right way. I do believe that you just re-rack the play, get it in bounce, and call timeout, and that's why we held it and didn't work out the way we wanted it to.
I've never heard a worse answer to any question in my life. Like, to go up there I like what we did, handled it the right way.
I'm going to guess Bears ownership did not like what he did.
Well, no, they didn't. They fired him today.
Deservedly so.
Yeah.
That was awful. And to say, I guess he said, I like what we did. He had to know. He had to have some idea that he was not going to have a job by the end of the weekend or by the end of the day today. Because to go up there and say, I like what we did, I guess he was trying to lie to himself, try and kid himself that was somehow not his fault, somehow that was not a total breakdown, a total blunder, that the communication was good there. His dumb-looking face when it cut to him at the end of the game. You can hear Nance and Romo, like, while the play is going on, realizing this catastrophe for Bears and the Bears fans, what's happening there. I still can't get over what we watched.
Well, and this is the same thing that he did when they gave up the Hail Mary
to
play
the Commanders.
To the Commanders, where the play before it, they just give up like a 15-yard out route to put them in position to throw Hail Mary. And he's asked about that after the game. He's like, I don't think that play really mattered. It really just came down to the last play. I had Clay Harbor on the show last week, and Clay's out there. He covers
Chicago
the Bears
guy, yeah.
In Chicago, and I mean, Clay was all over Eberflus, so this is not a situation that's come out of nowhere. But when we talk about coaches and have negative impacts, that's a coach that has a negative impact.
Well,
I feel like this is how you're talking about Coach Sirianni.
No, hang on. I've not said that Nick Sirianni has done anything that Jimmy Johnson hasn't seen in 70 years.
We would never see that from the Eagles and Nick Sirianni. They're a well-coached football team.
They have a good coach. He's not always good at the late game management stuff. I do believe a timeout would have been called there. The Eagles are a little bit more of a well-oiled machine than the Chicago Bears are.
Much more.
That does not mean that his in-game decision-making is, I think, even been good this year. That does not mean that it won't cost them at some point in a game that gets decided by one score. That does not mean that I'm not worried about it in a game like the Ravens or in the playoffs. For you to say that you're not worried about it at all and that his game management has just been like great this year.
I think it's a positive. I think overall he's been good.
I think it's some results bias out of you. I think you're looking at the games they've won. They've won handedly, so you haven't seen it matter. I think it could matter this Sunday, and I hope it doesn't, but I think it could.
Well, I mean, what about the results bias? He's getting crushed for a game that they won. The Jacksonville game, they win the game, and the whole week's about Nick Sirianni doesn't know how to coach.
Do you think he coached well in that game?
Yes, I did.
No, how? I didn't like...
The decisions didn't work. It doesn't mean they were the wrong decisions.
That's not why I'm saying they're bad decisions, though. For him, we'll take the field goal, because you mentioned that specifically before. Him kicking that field goal was the third best thing he could have done there. He could have either gone for it, he could have punted, or he could have kicked a low percentage field goal and given them a short field. And he picked the worst of the three.
Well, I trust Jake Elliott to make that kick. And again, this is a game from a few weeks ago here, but still, like, you punt, you might gain 20, you're probably only gaining like 20 yards of field position there, because the odds of you actually downing that inside the 10, not great. Like, there's much better chance that ball goes in the end zone. You're only getting like, what, 17, 20 yards of field position there. So I'm not into punting there.
I would have gone for it.
Let's be honest though, boss. If he goes for it and doesn't get it, he's getting crushed for going for it.
He might get crushed by other people, but I'm telling you what I thought in the moment. I mean, I'll maybe you sit in that studio over there. I sit out and watch the games in the lounge. I will run in and declare or timestamp. Yes, I agree with this decision. I don't agree with this decision. I will do that on Sunday.
Yeah, I want to hold you accountable.
215-592-9494
if you want to get in. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Dan in North Carolina. What's up, Dan?
Oh, hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. There's a lot of talk this week about the benefits of the Eagles losing this game coming up.
There was some talk about that. I don't agree with it, but
No. I don't agree with it also, but I do want to see them get pushed to the limit so that two-thirds into the season against a good team, there can be identified some areas that need to improve before we really move on.
I could get on board with that. Get pushed to the limit. They win a close game. This team gets thrown a little adversity, but they're still in the win column. This team needs to learn how to take a punch back.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's going easy, and the coaching can identify and what they need to work on. Because unless you're up against good competition, your weaknesses don't get exposed, and we need our weaknesses exposed.
Well, this is the thing, Dan. I think they've improved regardless, though, and I don't agree that they haven't been pushed a little bit. I think they were pushed that last week against the Rams. They came out at halftime, and they took the game over. The week before that, that Washington game was tight late, and I see a team that is improving. Like, I don't think they're a team that rests on their laurels at all.
Oh, no, I don't either, but there's always something that you can be doing better.
Of course, yeah.
And it gets down smaller and smaller and smaller. So I think the competition is going to help them identify, you know, things that they need to look at. The Eagles are doing great. Are you kidding me?
They are.
As a team, sure. They've won 7 in a row.
They
are. And they deserve credit for it. Sirianni deserves credit as well.
They are, Dan. What's something that's aged well?
Okay, now you mentioned the Wizard of Oz. Now, the Wizard of Oz 1930s. It's timeless because it's not bound to a culture. It's not bound to history. It's fantasy. And it reflects on the shortcomings that all of us may feel we have in our insecurity. So that's going to occur every year, every generation. At the same time, the movie Gone with the Wind was a tremendous movie. But it doesn't have the kind of longevity because it's focused on the Civil War, and it's not something that people can relate to.
Interesting.
But the thing that I think has the greatest longevity is the Twilight Zone.
Twilight?
Five seasons, and absolutely fantastic. And I would just ask everyone who's listening, at around Christmas time, go on YouTube and look for the episode The Night of the Meek, with Art Carney, who played with Jackie Gleason in The Honeymooners.
All right. There you go, Dan. Appreciate the call. You've probably never seen The Twilight Zone.
I've never seen The Twilight Zone. But
that's unnecessary, friend.
The last thing he said about the holiday, like a holiday movie or holiday music, I think in general, things marketed towards the holidays, because it comes out 1 month a year, I think those have perhaps better longevity than like a movie made in June, if that makes sense. Like, think about all these different Christmas movies you hear about every year. Someone called in earlier and said you should watch A Christmas Story, or you mentioned A Christmas Story. Like, that movie was made in what year? Like, Miracle on 34th Street, or Elf, or all these other, Home Alone, are all these really old Christmas, there's less turnover there because people love the classics. Same thing with holiday music. When's the last time, like, a new Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Was You came out in the 90s? A lot of the other Christmas songs are from, like, the 40s, yeah. 50s. Like, a lot of the old stuff just comes back every single year, and people love the tradition of hearing that, watching these movies around the holidays. I think those serve the test of time almost more than any other genre.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I did like what he said. It's kind of a deep message there about The Wizard of Oz, is that, you know, it is a story that's very relatable to people.
Sure.
Even, what if that's the case? Even at their young ages,
that they
my
relate,
kids are identifying with the story.
Like with the Tin Man or something like that?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they, I haven't
my
seen.
My daughter just likes the lion. She just says she wants the lion part over and over again.
She wants
likes
the lion part?
Yeah.
Okay.
And my son is a little devil. He likes the flying monkeys. That's his favorite
I haven't
thing.
Seen The Wizard of Oz since I was a kid, I think.
My son likes when the flying monkeys come down and steal a dog.
Do they just watch this movie on repeat? Is that how they're doing
it? Yeah, that's what they've been doing like all week long. They just watch The Wizard of Oz over and over again.
Over and over again. They don't get sick of it.
No, they love it.
Interesting.
It ages well.
It does age well, but apparently, I don't know if I could watch any movie over and over again like that, and they're watching The Wizard of Oz.
Have you ever seen Wizard of Oz, Fran?
Yeah, did you overrated. Say this earlier? It's overrated. As
overrated? You would say it's overrated.
Not it's fine. It was fine when I was like 9. That was it.
Why but you know who's not overrated is Jennifer Lopez. Am I right?
Yeah, right.
Why do you say it's overrated, Fran?
It's just not that compelling of a story. Like, it's fine. Like, when you watch it when you're 9, it's like, oh, cool. They walk the golden road and then Dorothy
the yellow
gets her,
brick road. Wait,
whatever.
Hang on.
All the same.
Golden, road.
Golden yellow, whatever.
The
it's
yellow
all the same
brick road. It's one of the most famous songs ever.
Yeah, whatever. Also an overrated song. An overrated song.
Yeah, now being on this side of the glass, I mean, you could see why Fran can be a little irritating, right? You could see it now. Like, pretty counterproductive.
You just can't go up against me, Tom. That's the problem.
Yeah. I do hold a lot against you.
The problem is, if I agree with you on this, that means I'm aligning with you, which is against my personal brand.
And you can't betray your fellow producer.
I'm a producer at heart. Just because I can't go all big time just because I'm sitting in this room today.
Okay. Yeah.
I know you abandoned the producers years ago. And
yeah.
Now you're Mr. Hotshot. You only host. You're big time.
Yeah, big hotshot.
Ginormous ego.
Ginormous ego.
I do. I now walk around talent, here Tom, just throwing papers and slamming doors.
Yeah, I'm afraid to work with
barking
you.
Barking
like
commands.
Tom, Tom, unlike you, who's in it for the money and the fame, I actually enjoy the fundamentals of radio. I enjoy producing. And when I get the opportunity to host, I enjoy that too.
Okay. Yeah. There you go. Sports Radio 94 WIP, Tom Kelly, Dan Wilson with you on a Friday. And I got to thank our guy, Bam in Upper Darby, sending us over lunch today, some pizza, some fries. Bam's the best, man. Incredible.
Listen, I was excited. So our intern, Lewis, is here today. I see him in the middle of one of the segments. Bam first calls in, says he's bringing the pizza.
Thank you to Lewis for all his help today, by the way.
Thank you to Lewis, of course, coming in on Black Friday, which is, de facto a holiday, day after Thanksgiving. And I get all excited. He of course, ordered you a pizza the last time this happened, where you left your food in the fridge. It got taken out. It was a plain pizza. I loved it. So I see Lewis walking in with the pizza. I get all excited. I think we're getting free lunch. I open it up and it's buffalo chicken on the pizza. I don't know. Not my favorite.
Are you kidding me, Buzz? Are you complaining about a free lunch?
Yeah. Listen. I want to thank Bam for his contributions. It was very nice of
him. You cannot be serious!
What a jerk!
But if you're going to send in free pizza, just send in plain. Like, I was so disappointed when I opened the box.
This, I cannot believe this.
This
guy.
Is just this is disrespectful. My God, Buzz, it's a bad look.
Are you soft like Dan?
Like this is what you can't deal with a little spice. You can't eat the little buffalo chicken and barbecue.
Took a few bites. Not my favorite. I'm not a big as you know. I'm a big plain eater guy. I'm not a big topping.
Yeah, you're
on pizza.
You're a weird eater. The other night, like they were talking about on the afternoon show, you're just eating like plain beans.
This was not the other.
In the producer studio?
No, I was not eating plain beans. I had refried beans with chips.
Weird.
What's wrong with refried beans and chips?
No, like salsa or sour cream or anything?
I just zip the chips in the beans.
Is that weird, Fran?
I mean, I keep thinking the day after Thanksgiving where we give thanks, the guy's not thankful enough. Ungrateful.
Well put.
Unbelievable.
I gave all the thanks yesterday.
Oh, no, he's all out of thankfulness.
Bam,
oh, my God.
Sent
gosh.
Him the pizza today. I opened it up. I was all excited.
Bam, he does not speak for all of us. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much, man. Dan Wilson's just rude. Just rude.
I opened up the pizza box. I was all excited. I was hungry. And it was buffalo
He's
chicken
He's a fraud.
Pizza. It was not my favorite. I don't know what to say. I've taken two bites of it. It's just not my thing.
Wow. I mean, I don't even know what to say.
I think from now on, when Odyssey tells us they have free food in the lobby,
Dan shouldn't be allowed.
None for Dan.
None for Dan.
Zero.
You mean like when John Johnson leaves his snack of the night overnight?
Don't deflect this onto Johnson.
Yeah, you are. I don't like that.
Dan, this is heinous what you're doing. I mean, somebody buys us a pizza today. Bam, who's one of our loyal listeners, one of our most beloved listeners, sends us food, sends us fries, sends us pizza, and you have the audacity to complain about the type of pizza that he sent us. I mean, it's terrible.
And by the way, buffalo chicken's a great flavor.
It
whatever,
is.
Topping.
Yeah. I just housed one of these buffalo chickens. Delicious.
I wouldn't say I'm complaining, but I'm definitely not as excited as you guys are.
Wow. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, it sounds like complaining to me.
Dan does not speak for everybody else. I'm sorry, Bam.
But Bam, in all seriousness, thank you very much. I'm a weird eater. It was a thoughtful gesture.
Yeah, after 10 minutes of that?
That is hollow praise. Hollow thing.
Did you see that John Fanta thing the other day where the guy tried to salvage the call? That's what I just did.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, I'll play the clip for you. Fran, did you see this by any chance?
I did not.
All right, so John Fanta, 30 seconds at most on this. John Fanta, who's a college basketball analyst. You know what a Twitter space is? Are you too old to understand what that is?
Yes.
Okay, Twitter Spaces, it's kind of like a sports radio show you host on Twitter. It's like an audio only. I could host it, and I can appoint other people to speak. Kind of like a Zoom call, but it's like a public forum. So this guy calls in with a college basketball question, and it like really got under his skin, and he was trying to be a jerk to this guy. And John Fanta goes on and on and on for like a minute 30. And then at the end of the call, the guy goes, oh, by the way, like, thank you for answering my question. Happy Thanksgiving. And Fanta just yells out, you don't get to salvage the call. And that's basically what I just did. I played it on my show yesterday.
All right, there you go. You're really killing it this segment, Buzz.
Thank you. Just next time, Bam, you send pizza, I want plain pizza.
Bam, don't listen to him. You send us whatever you feel like you want to send him. We will appreciate it. Fran will appreciate it. I will appreciate it. Dan won't appreciate
it. It's like opening up a holiday gift and you think it's something great and it's like, ah,
just awful.
It
is that what you tell your family members if they give you something, a gift? Or you're I wanted this, but you gave me this, so I don't really like it.
Honesty is the best policy, friend.
I had a situation like that yesterday, too, because Thanksgiving, my daughter's second birthday as well, so she's getting a bunch of presents. She got a lot of clothes. My son was just complaining because he was helping open the presents.
He wanted something good for himself.
He's like, I want her to get toys so I can steal them. So
right,
yeah,
right. And then honesty is the best policy, is best in most situations, but not in this situation.
Bam, next time he sends a pizza, it can be a plain pizza.
Well, what if?
No, Bam, don't, Bam, do not listen to Buzz.
What if you bought TK a present for like Christmas or something, right? And TK was like, "Nah, I wanted this. I went whatever."
Yeah, that'll be better the next time I buy him a gift.
It's terrible.
215. If he tells me he likes something he didn't like, then I'm just going to make the same mistake.
No, you're disrespectful and you're unappreciative, Buzz. 215-592-9494.
Feel free to take the rest of the pizza
if you want to get in. Let's go back to the phones here. Go to Tom in Middletown. What's up, Tom?
Hey, what's up, guys?
How you doing?
You're doing a fantastic job filling in today.
Thanks, Thank you. I appreciate it.
Now, listen, I've got a lot to cover here, and I'm going to do it quick because I know you only have a few minutes on here. All right. I'm going to give you two quotes. All right. You are what your record says you are. Okay, Detroit's 11-1. Everyone's high on them and so on. But now here's another quote. Everyone has a plan until they're punched in the face. Look at Detroit's season. I mean, what they have left to play. They have a lot of tough games to play. They're going to be punched in the face. And let's see what kind of adversity they have, and then I'll be a believer in them. But right now, I am not a believer in them. I think the Eagles are a much more physical, mauling, dominant team. I don't care if we have to play them in Detroit, Philadelphia, whatever. I think we beat that team. But let's just see if Detroit could take a punch in the face, what they're going to take in the next 5 weeks.
Yeah, no, and I hear you, Tom, and that's the thing. I look at Detroit, and I think they're a good team. Like, obviously, they're 11-1. They're really talented, but Well, you know, we look at the Eagles' schedule. Detroit has not played a lot of difficult teams of late either. They've had a lot of the Titans and the Jaguars, those kind of teams. And, I mean, they barely scraped past the Bears yesterday. And I think they're good, but I think we've just built them into being something that they're not. Like, there's some, you know, Goliath. I think the Eagles are the better team.
Also, are we still they're doing not. The you are what your record says you are, even after last year? Didn't the 2023 Eagles disprove that?
Well, yes. Okay, but, wow. I'll give you that. All right, but listen, this is where Detroit is going to miss Hutchinson. These next five games, you're going to see where Hutchinson was so big for that team. I'm telling you, if they might lose. And I'm Minnesota could squeak in and win that division. I am not concerned about if we beat Baltimore this week. I think we are going to be in control of the number one seed. I am not worried about Detroit at all. They haven't been punched in the face yet, and they're going to be punched in the face three of the next 5 weeks, and I want to see how they could handle that.
Well, I hear you, Tom. What do you got that's aged well?
Well, I'm sorry?
Something that's aged well for our side topic?
Oh my God, yes, I got a great one. Something that aged very well is the combination of Merrill Reese and Mike Quick as announcers.
There you go, Tom. Appreciate the call. I mean, Merrill, Mike, of course.
The best in the business.
Yep, absolutely.
I could be a winner.
Yeah, and to his point there, you know.
Today's prize is a Buffalo chicken pizza.
Yeah, yeah. But you look at the NFC North, and that is, for as good as the Lions are, they haven't clinched that division yet. You got the Vikings at 9-2, Packers now at 9-3, and I think the Vikings are, I don't know, they're kind of a fraud to me. Like, Sam Darnold's playing well. I don't really believe in them. The Packers are the team that I think could track them down, potentially. Huge game on Thursday night. Like, for the Eagles, if Green Bay is able to beat Detroit, that would put the Eagles in a great spot to potentially jump them and get that one seed if the Eagles do win in Baltimore.
Sure, if they do win in Baltimore. Yes, no, we should all be, to your point earlier in the show, like Packers fans, because they have the tiebreaker over Green Bay. Doesn't seem like they would have the tiebreaker over Detroit. No head-to-head matchup there. But to his point about not being punched in the mouth, like, I don't know, have the Eagles been punched in the mouth yet this season? This Sunday kind of feels like the first, and they're not going to have as many chances to be punched in the mouth. Maybe this game, the Steelers game, but like, how have the Eagles been punched in the mouth? I know he's saying the Lions haven't been, but have the, like, I just don't think it only applies to them and not the Eagles.
Yeah, and I think it's probably similar for both. But with the Eagles, you know, the physicality in which they play with, I do think is a big deal. And the way they're able to control the line of scrimmage, and that's what I'm interested in seeing this Sunday in Baltimore, is that Ravens front is not that good. Like, we look at the Ravens, and typically they're thought of as a defensive team. Their defense isn't that good this year. I think they're going to have a lot more trouble stopping the Eagles' offense than the Eagles' defense is going to have stopping their offense.
That may be true. Although, as Seth Joyner pointed out, they are much better against the run than the pass, which may cause, and we could get into how much each of us trust Jalen Hurts to pass the ball in a game like this. We don't know if they're going to have Devontae Smith. It seems to be leaning towards maybe not for the second consecutive week. Like, if Saquon Barkley, let's say they quote-unquote contain him, whatever that looks like. This guy, after last week, I don't even know what containing Saquon Barkley is, but let's say they hold him under 100 yards. Let's say he doesn't run for two or three touchdowns, whatever the case is. Let's say he can't win you the game by himself. Like, do you trust Jalen Hurts? All right, they make him pass. The Ravens should be more familiar with that strategy than anyone, because teams used to do that to Lamar all the time in the playoffs. If they go try and say, all right, Jalen Hurts needs to beat us with his arm. Jalen Hurts needs to go win this game with his arm and be the better quarterback in this game. How do we feel about him doing that?
We'll see. I mean, I don't think the Eagles are just going to, like, abandon the run game.
I don't think abandon, like, the run, but what, they're not going to have the same level of success that they did, that they, you know, against the Rams, perhaps.
Maybe not. I mean, I think the Eagles' run game, though, and their offensive line, it's almost matchup proof. Now, who knows? We'll see if that's the case this weekend. But they dominate pretty much every defensive line, every defensive front they go against. And I have confidence they'll be able to do the same thing this week. And I'll say this in terms of Hurts, because I've been very critical of Jalen Hurts this year. I think largely he has not played well enough. I thought Sunday night was one of his best games of the season. I thought, aside from the Cincinnati game, the game that he played against the Rams was his second best game of the year. I thought he managed it really well, and I don't care about the numbers with Jalen Hurts. Like, if you're only throwing it 20, 25 times, just get the ball to A.J. Brown. Like, get the ball to your best players. And this is what Jalen needs to recognize. It's just get the ball out quickly. You have a lot of great players around you. Get your great players the football. And I think he did a really good job of that Sunday night. I feel a lot better about him going into this game than I felt about him in some of these previous
games. Jalen Hurts deserves credit for how well they're playing this season. He might be a game manager. He might be just, quote-unquote, doing what they're asking him to do. But he deserves credit for how he's playing. It's more so, like, what our last caller's point was, if this team were to get punched in the mouth, let's say. Let's say the adversity is facing this team. They're down by a couple of scores. Hurts needs to go make a play. I wonder if the Eagles need to, out of necessity, ask Jalen Hurts to do more than he's been doing, do we still feel the same way about him? Does he still remain turnover free? Do the Eagles still, on the offensive end, dominate the way they have been if Saquon Barkley can't be the focal point to this, the same extent? You're probably right. I think I generally agree with the sentiment that this Eagles offensive line, Saquon Barkley, are generally pretty matchup proof. It doesn't seem like there's any team in the league who can really get an edge over either of those. But there might be teams who contain them enough, or who force the Eagles out of running the ball enough, that they have to find some other way to score or find some other way to win the game that isn't just give the ball to Saquon and that's it. The same way it was last Sunday.
And we'll see. I just think the Eagles, hey, they're going to do what they're going to do typically. 215-592-9494. This segment sponsored by the Jug Handle Inn, award-winning wings, great food, and incredible specials. Spread your wings and rediscover the Jug. Let's go back to the phones here. Go to Al in North Philly. What's up, Al?
Well, I've enjoyed waiting. I've been on my way to the ER, but I had to stay on long.
Everything okay?
Because I don't know yet. But I had to stay on long enough because, Tom Kelly, you've been insane today. Nothing you said
made
sense about the
Tell him, Al. Give it to him.
Versus the Eagles. You said, literally, that Sirianni is great at making adjustments. We watched him fail to make a single adjustment to salvage a 10-1 season last year. And you know what? He had all the information he needed because the 49er players were getting in front of every TV camera possible and telling him what the problem was.
Wow, what about this year?
Offense was too predictable.
Al, what about this season? You don't get any credit for the adjustments that have been made this season coming out of the bye week?
No, his offensive coordinators made those adjustments.
But last year it's Nick.
Come on, let me finish. You already talked. I'm in the ER. I'm about to die. So let me. So listen. What about Detroit?
Hope you're right, Al.
What about Detroit? You said that you don't fear Detroit. You can go right into the Eagles. Can go right into Detroit and they'll win. And I'm like, you don't have to fear them because you're not playing them. But when you look at Detroit and you base so much on yesterday's game, didn't you realize that was a division game? Are you old enough to remember when the Giants, Washington, and the Cowboys were winning world championships and the only team they couldn't beat was consistently in the regular season was the Eagles? We couldn't sniff a Super Bowl, but we could beat our division rivals. That's what that game was yesterday. Don't put any stock on what you saw from Detroit yesterday. They're a far better team than that. And look, Chicago, their coach got fired. So come on. It was not anything that mattered to anybody outside of Chicago. Detroit didn't even care about that game. It's a division game. So when you talk about Dan Campbell being isn't as good a coach as Sirianni. I mean, are you crazy? Dan Campbell's a man, and Sirianni is a marketing rep.
Wow, what's the difference, Al? What is the difference between Dan? What makes Dan Campbell so much better than Nick Sirianni, Al?
He's a man. I just told you from him on down, that team plays like a team of soldiers, and our guys are trying to figure that out. They're getting better, and they might pull it off, but it will be in spite of Sirianni, this marketing rep, this inspirational figure. He doesn't know how to coach. His offensive and defensive coordinators have always been the brains. And when he did coach, he had an offense that was so stagnant and predictable that it was laughable. Remember when McCafferty did that broadcast when he predicted each play that that Sirianni would call?
Yes, but come Al, on, man. But
you
Al,
out of your mind. Give it an opportunity. Give them a chance to grow. Let them beat Baltimore, and then you'll see something. But the sample size is too small this year. But what we do know is, for the last 2 years, Detroit has had elite caliber. Their offense and defense, the schemes have been great. They've been excellent teams,
well,
but we haven't for the last two years.
I hear
give
you, Al.
Time,
Al,
okay? Then you make your statement.
I appreciate your call. We love you, and we're hoping for the best for you, Al. Okay, buddy?
Me too. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, Al. Appreciate the call.
Your take drove someone to the ER.
I mean, seriously, it threw me off a little bit. I hope Al's okay. That's
he said he was on the way to the ER,
right?
And
then he said he was, you know.
I hope facetiously that
I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, I hope Al's okay. Al, we're praying for you, buddy. But that is exactly what I mean when it comes to Nick and the haters. It's like, oh, well, last year, when they didn't adjust, that's all Nick's fault. But coming out of the bye this week, oh, it was everybody else.
No,
they were 2-2. They came out of the bye, and they made a concerted effort. And Jordan Mailata, and I think we can get this sound here, Jordan Mailata from the Players Lounge a couple weeks ago, where he talked about the conversations that they had after the bye week. And the offensive line, it was namely Jordan Mailata, Landon Dickerson, and Lane Johnson. And they went into Nick Sirianni's office during the bye week, and they told him that they needed to be more of a running team. Here was Jordan Mailata on the Players Lounge a few weeks ago.
What was it like working with Nick during the bye week on maybe trying to figure out what you guys could do better?
I think when you have a relationship with Coach Sirianni, Nick, it's easier to come forward and tell him. Like, you know, we weren't frustrated. Well, like, you know, what everybody thinks we're like, you know,
pissed
off.
Tense situation.
Like, we weren't pissed off.
Right.
You know? But we knew that we could go to him and have these conversations, you know, just like talk about, you know, what we think we should do. Well, not even that, just realize, you know, make him realize you have a great offensive line, too.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just have A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Saquad, Jalen, you know, and Dallas. Like, you have your offensive line as well, and you can lean on us whenever you want to. And you know, they're pretty, attentive.
There was no pushback because, I mean, man, guys are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you have a relationship, there's no pushback. It's just a conversation. It's just a conversation, just like how we're doing it right now. And, you know, it's up to coach and the coaching staff to, you know, did they listen or did they hear?
Yeah, gotcha.
Did they listen or were they hearing?
And that's the thing, man. Like, they went to Nick and they asked him and had a conversation with him about, we should be running the ball more, we should be more run heavy. Nick deserves credit for listening to his players, because a lot of coaches won't even
Have that kind of open door policy.
Right. That's where we start. But number two, to actually internalize what they're telling you, to think about it, be like, okay, well, maybe that does make sense. Maybe we should do it that way. He deserves credit for that. And with Nick, we only look at the negatives. We don't look at the positives.
So I agree he deserves credit. I agree that this fan base in this city has been sometimes generally negative on Sirianni. But I myself don't feel like I only look at the negatives when it comes to Sirianni. I have been, you know, the one today and overall just on the station and everywhere acknowledging that he gets credit for the number of games they've won in his tenure. I don't think that's by accident, so to speak. I think he's a good motivator. I think he is willing to adjust. I think he's willing to listen to his players. And that goes a long way in the NFL. There are still tactical decisions in game that worry me. There are still game preparation type stuff, why they start slow each and every week, that worry me when it comes to a guy like Nick Sirianni. But overall, I think he is a good coach. I think great coaches perhaps don't have some of the blunders he's had as recently just a couple of weeks ago. I hope he proves me wrong on Sunday. I hope they look like a well-prepared team. I hope they play well for all four quarters. I hope it's not that close. But I think if they do play a close game and he coaches well, then I'll give him all the credit in the world. And I really, really hope that's the case.
But, and this is the thing, though. Like, I think we need to recognize not all coaches are perfect, and not all the decisions are going to be the right decision.
I don't expect them to be perfect.
Well, but this is the thing. Like, and I'll look at it in terms of Andy Reid. Like, for years, Andy Reid would get killed. Time management, blah, 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 all this stuff.
Sure.
Andy Reid is one of the best coaches in the history of the NFL. Yet when he's your coach, you focus on the negatives. And I'm not talking about you in particular.
Just in general.
I'm talking about in general, we focus on the negatives. And that's why, you know, and I love Al, but you look at Dan Campbell, and for him to say that Dan Campbell is like a remarkably better coach than Nick Sirianni, that's not based on anything. Like, that's based on just you like Dan Campbell more. You like Dan Campbell, you don't like Nick Sirianni. Because they're basically the same guy. Like, they're basically in the same role. They're both highly analytical when it comes to their decision-making. They rely on the analytics part of it. So, like, I don't see any difference, really, between Nick Sirianni and Dan Campbell. I don't see much difference at this point between Nick Sirianni and John Harbaugh either.
Well, I guess what you could say as far as this season is the Lions have been in less chances, less opportunities to try and make some of those critical decisions.
But look at last year. I mean, Dan Campbell made some decisions in the NFC Championship game that might have cost him that game.
And I'm aware. And I'm sure if I was a Lions fan or we were Lions fans, we would have killed him for that. I don't think Sirianni was good at the end of last year either. We weren't, you know, you and I both wanted him fired at the end of last season. So coaches can obviously evolve. I just think I think in general the Lions are a better team as of right now. That it's obviously pretty close. That can change. And I think when we look at John Harbaugh, there's just so much to go off of. That guy is so experienced. He's been with one of the best organizations in football and in sports for such a long time that for me to say that Sirianni's in his class as of right now, I mean, you admitted earlier in the show, he's top five. Sirianni, even if he's top 10, that means that he's on the, you know, he's in the back seat, but Harbaugh's in the front row.
I'd have to tally it out. I don't. You know what? I don't know if Harbaugh is top five anymore. Put together my top five head coaches during the break.
Okay, so
there you go. Currently,
similar. You're to what you know. Me, you, and Ashlyn have done ranking the quarterbacks, and you stopped to get to Sirianni. I want to see your top NFL head coaches, and you stop when you get to Sirianni.
All right. We'll do that when we get
back.
Unless
Sirianni's in the top five, then round it out.
He might be. Sports Radio 94 WIP. Tom Kelly, Dan Wilson. With you on a Friday afternoon. Is this your favorite Christmas song?
Yeah, this song represents you.
It does? The Grinch?
Yes.
You wouldn't touch Tom with a 39.5-foot pole?
Exactly.
I wouldn't want him to touch me with a 39.5-foot pole. All right?
Pause.
I do like the Grinch song.
I enjoy the Grinch. I'm a Grinchman.
You're a Grinch guy?
Yeah.
Can that be your, you know, it's Many Men is your intro now, right?
Yeah. Why didn't you play that today, by the way?
Because you're with Dan.
Yeah, Many Men doesn't give off Dan Wilson vibes.
All right, hang on. There's plenty of people who wouldn't mind having me out of the way.
What?
Anyway, so can the Grinch have you listened
to the lyrics of Many Men?
Yes. Well, okay, gotcha.
Well, can the Grinch be your intro for the holidays?
Yeah, sure. Sure.
Wait, hang on.
Whatever makes it work for you, friend.
I once opened up a show with You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch, like either last December or the December before that, and you took great exception that I was referring to you as the Grinch.
I don't remember that. Okay. I mean, I don't remember. I'm going to
see if I can uncover that audio.
Yeah, I don't doubt it, but I don't remember it.
You were like, I don't know why I'm the Grinch, and I was like, I don't know. You seem your persona seems to fit it, and you did not like it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, fair enough.
215. Right, so you've come around on it.
Yeah. Whatever. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. I was talking a lot about the Eagles today, and one of the main questions that we have been asking, how do they stack up with the Lions? And if the Eagles played in Detroit in an NFC Championship game, who would win it? That is our Twitter poll question at WIP Midday Show on Twitter. A Twitter question brought to you by Mark's Jewelers. Mark's Jewelers has twice the twinkle this holiday. Win a brand new Harley Davidson or Ike's custom championship ring. Details at marks-jewelers.com. Eagles or Lions, who win the NFC Championship game in Detroit? 67% say the Eagles.
Okay, listen, people have faith in the football team. That's two-thirds. That seems about right. I expect people to be high on them. It's also fresh off the Lions game yesterday where people saw the Lions narrowly escape. I would be interested to see this poll again, depending on how regardless of how the Eagles-Ravens game goes on Sunday, I would be interested to see this poll again.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And, hey, the Eagles probably won't get that one seed. But even if they don't, I'm confident they could go to Detroit and win the NFC Championship game. 215-592-9494 if you want to get in. 215-592-9494. Also talking about Nick Sirianni. Do you think his game management is more a positive or a negative for the Eagles? I say positive. Dan says negative. And you had said, Dan, go to in the break, look at how many coaches you definitely want to have over Nick Sirianni.
Top five.
I would, like, if we're looking at just game management, though.
We're not looking at just game management. Which coaches do you want? If I said you could have any coach in the NFL, who would you take? I assume you'd take Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, number one, okay. Obviously.
Okay, then who's number two, and so on? Who would you want as the coach of your football team?
Number two, well, it's hard without looking at the infrastructure of it. It is.
Okay.
I would take Nick Sirianni over John Harbaugh at this point.
Is he number two? He's your second best coach in the league. More than Harbaugh, more than Tomlin, more than...
I kind of want to say, at this point, Sean McDermott, but McDermott's made decisions to lose games, too. Like, I don't, like...
Any coach?
All of these coaches, I think they're all pretty similar. That's what I'm telling you, Dan, is when you look at Mike Tomlin, I think Mike Tomlin's a good coach, but Mike Tomlin hasn't done anything in the playoffs for years. Tomlin has made decisions in games that have cost his team. And I just look at Nick Sirianni. Nick, I think, makes more positive decisions than negative decisions. And I think that's more than you can say for a lot of these coaches.
I think he's a good coach more than he's a bad coach. Do I think his game management decisions, I'm talking about like game management decisions that have some level of difficulty, do I think that he has had a well above 500 track record? No, I don't. Or do I think he's had even just a regular above 500 track record? No, I don't. Like, it doesn't, to me, speak, like, and some of this is the importance of the decisions he's made, but it doesn't feel like he's very impulsive. It feels like he doesn't have a rhyme or reason necessarily. I think he's gotten better. I hope he's gotten better. I still have my doubts. I'm sorry. I can't just move past how the Saints game went, how the Jaguars game went, how little decisions, even at the end of the first half, as recently as last week went. I'm not there. I can't bring myself there to say, yeah, let's just crown Nick Sirianni one of the top five coaches in the NFL.
Now, I don't see it that way at all. I don't look at Nick and say he doesn't have a rhyme or reason and he's impulsive. I think, if anything, he's consistent. Like, Nick Sirianni is consistently going to be aggressive. Like, you know, if the Eagles are in a 4th-and-3, on the other team's side of the field at, like, their 48-yard line, they're going to go for it. Like, they're going to go for it. That, to me, is a good thing that you know in those situations you're going to go for it.
So, I'm sorry, that 57-yard field goal kicked against the Jags was what, 4th-and-3, 4th-and-4? Did he go for it?
4th-and-4, yeah.
Did he go for it?
Yeah, well, it was the... I mean, score matters, Dan.
Of course,
I mean,
it matters. Score matters.
You're
score
up 5 points at that correct. Point. So if you make the field goal, you go up 8.
And so it's still a one-possession game, just to be clear. We're taking a high risk to just still remain at a one-possession game, as opposed to going for it. And if score matters so much, then why did he go for 2 when he was up 16 points? Like, what? Like, that's where I find the logic to be inconsistent.
Well, the logic is that the team went offside, so you can move the ball a yard closer to the goal line.
I understand that.
Okay. Well,
is there any difference between being up 17 or 18?
Well, no. Dan, I said that was the decision that I did disagree with in that game. Probably should have kicked the extra point. Now, I understood why he did it, considering the analytics of it. And again, it goes back to the consistency of Nick relies on the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the analytics of you're going to convert that play, what, 92% of the time is the number that I think we have with the touch push?
It's well above what it is.
You very rarely do not convert that.
Correct.
Yeah. So
I understand.
They probably should not have done it with where the score was. Now, second quarter, you're looking at the upside of getting that extra point. Again, probably shouldn't have done it, but I kind of get it. Now, at the end of the game, I mean, you're up 5. You can go up 8 with that field goal. And yes, it keeps it a one-possession game, but you also protect yourself against if they score a touchdown, they got to go for 2. You stop them, you win the game. Even if they get the 2, worst-case scenario, you're going to overtime. Kicker's got to make the kick.
I did not have the numbers in front of me at the time, but I thought to myself, the odds he makes this kick like the risk reward ratio of the odds he makes this kick versus the reward of still being up one possession did not feel worth it to me. It felt like going for the first down, playing aggressive, running more time off the clock, potentially getting a touchdown to ice the game was a worthwhile risk for them to actually have. And then if they missed the kick, they actually had 7 yards better field position than if they just went for it on fourth down.
Would you say they had a far better chance of getting the first down than Jake Elliott making that kick? Like a far better chance? I wouldn't.
I think the payoff, no, but that's not really the point. The payoff is it's a better reward if you get it.
Yeah, fair enough. But
like if you think it's a similar risk, why not go for the higher reward?
Because, I mean, if you're looking at it, and I think he trusted the kicker first off. Like, that's okay. Part of it. He trusted the kicker.
You can trust
I think
him all he you
looks
want.
At,
but
I think he looks at going from 5-8 as a big reward. Like, I would, too.
I it's not as big of a reward as going up 2 scores. It's not as big of a reward as milking more time off the clock and putting the ball in the end zone or putting more time, running 2 more minutes off the clock, and then Elliott kicks a shorter field goal. Like, it just didn't, the calculus in the moment did not add up to
it. But again, we're analyzing.
I know we're going through the semantics of it.
And your efforts to prove that he's a bad game manager, we're going back to a game from a month ago. Like we're going back to a game from a month ago. What are we doing here? Okay,
no, I had to go back to last week. He was bad at managing the end of the half. You asked specifically in that game what I took issue with.
But how many times have they scored at the end of the first half? How many times? They do it like every week.
I understand that you're going to go back to how great he is in the middle eight. You're asking me to pick out spots where he's been bad at game managing. That was just happened to be the spot last week where he was bad at game managing. And it wasn't a first-time occurrence or a second-time occurrence or a third or a fourth-time occurrence. There have been multiple times within specific games that I've said, I don't like how this guy makes in-game decisions. I know you're saying that there's a rhyme or reason to, yes, if they get down to the 1 yard line, they go for two because they have the tush push. But I don't think there's always, I don't think he always fully thinks it through. And I remember after that Saints game, then he like, it was the Bucks after that, but there was a game where he overcompensated basically because he was getting ripped for his decisions the week before. It just doesn't feel like he has a uniform rule. It's kind of like an impulsive blackjack player, and that really doesn't sit well with me at
all. Yeah, and that's where I just disagree. Like, I don't view it that way. I think the New Orleans game, yes. The New Orleans game, I thought he coached that game poorly. Going forward at the end of the first half was silly. 15 seconds left. You're not going to have much upside there, even if you get the first down. But generally, I think Nick's kind of consistent with his decision-making, and I think he's pretty not predictable in a bad way, but, like, I think generally, you know what he's going to do in certain situations. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I think there needs to be a little bit more analysis of the situation, analysis of what the score is. As you said, score matters. But listen, I hope I'm wrong. At the end of the day, I hope I'm wrong. I hope he manages a good game on Sunday, rest of the season. And this is ancient history, and we can all love Nick Sirianni. I think he's coached well enough so far this season. The days of thinking he'd be fired or he's not the Eagles coach of the future, I think those are long gone. I just still have slight doubts.
You willing to give him the extension? Give him the extension
now. I think he's going to get it no matter what. So sure, why not?
There we go. Nick Sirianni in town for a while. 215-592-9494. Injury update from practice today. Devontae Smith is at Eagles practice. He practiced in a limited capacity yesterday. We don't know how much, obviously, he'll be involved yet, but he's on the field. That's a good sign. Darius Slay is not. Still has not cleared concussion protocol, it appears. So it looks like Isaiah Rodgers will make the start at corner. But Devontae Smith being back on the field, really big deal in a game where the Eagles are probably going to need to score a decent amount of points. Let's go back to the phones. Bob and Delran. What's up, Bob?
Hey, how are you doing, gentlemen?
Good. What's up?
Hey, I wanted to two subjects. I want to talk to Eagles and a little bit of Phillies. But the Eagles, this is a little bit off kilter, but I always like to look at the outliers of teams that could maybe cause a lot of trouble in the NFC that nobody's talking about, but they are slowly getting their players back. And I would hate to play them in the playoffs because they're talented. That team is the vaunted San Francisco 49ers. And you may say, they're 5-6, but they're getting their players back. They still got that talent. They've just been banged up. And if they come back with their thing, and I don't like the team, but I'm keeping an eye on them is what I'm going to say. I think they're very dangerous if they do get in the playoffs. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, this is the thing, though, Bob. I mean, they are running out of leeway here. I mean, they're 5-6. It looks like they're going to get Purdy back this week, but they play Sunday night in Buffalo. Like, yeah, you lose that game, you're 5-7. And that's a game they probably need to win on Sunday night.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're absolutely right. So that might be a turning point one way or another, too, as well. Plus, I want to talk about the Phillies a little bit. Can I?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking about, you know, they need to change the approach and they need to change some things with that team. But one of the players that it's been brought off and say, and the Phillies, at least what I've heard, and maybe you've heard differently, you guys are closer to it, is that Trey Turner needs to move to the outfield. That's where he started because he's a horrible shortstop, but he doesn't want to do it. If I'm the coach or manager, I'm saying you're going out there. Why are people, and I know the players run the game, but at the same time, you're going to pay a lot of money, and you need to think of the team. And I'm sorry, but and then move Stott over to shortstop again. And you've automatically probably improved your infield. Second base, we got to find somebody. Why can't managers or GMs say to the guy, look, we're paying you, you need to do that, we don't want to hear it. Just like somebody tells you at your job. Why is there a hesitancy on that?
Listen, I'm all in favor. I've thought for a while that they need to move Trey Turner off of shortstop. I think it's, frankly, organizational malpractice that they're going to bring him back. But the fact of the matter is, unfortunately, that you know, Major League Baseball players, in particular those who signed $300 million contracts, are not treated the same way that you or I are at our jobs. You know, well, like there are agents who get involved. There's player egos that get involved. I agree. Yeah. It's stupid. I don't think it should be what takes place in this case. I think there's a line for everything. And I think Trey Turner's lack of ability to play shortstop has crossed that line. But you're asking why is it different? That's just, like it or not.
What would the fallout be if they just say, you've got to go there? What's he going to do? Not show up for work? And not
That's kind of my takeaway. Like, what's he going to do? Hold out? Like, he's going to sulk around? I agree with you. I'm just saying as a general rule, I mean, sometimes players would hold out or you get pressure from the agent or, you know, the agent says, all right, well, the next time a negotiation comes around, we're putting in more, you know, stipulations on the, I don't know. It's stupid. I think it's annoying, too.
Well, what's something that's aged well, Bob?
That ages well or does not age well?
That aged well for our side topic.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to say wine ages well.
Okay. There you go. Appreciate the call, Bob.
So much so that it's the expression. It ages like fine wine.
Yeah. What happened there, Fran? I mean, you have the stars up for the side topic.
He didn't seem to have a side topic idea. I'm mad at Bob. No, it's not me. It's him.
No, that's bad producer.
You're trying to deflect. You're trying to deflect like he was earlier.
That's a bad job by you, Fran.
No, it's you.
Okay. But, no, as to Bob's point, though, ridiculous that they will refuse to broach this situation of Trey Turner.
He shouldn't play another game at shortstop.
No, I mean, he literally cost them in their elimination game, where we can look at it.
You love bringing up this play.
Well, it was a terrible play. It should have been a double play, and it changed the game. And then he sent Estevez out there with the bases loaded. We all knew how that was going to end. Lindor at the plate. And for people who don't know what we're talking about here, bases loaded. Game four, Trey Turner takes his time coming home. Dan, doesn't any, you know, shorthanded shortstop get two there?
Yeah, they it might be up to the catcher at that point, but definitely delivers a quicker throw. He was hesitant. He was just making sure he got one. He didn't look especially confident in his abilities
because
at that particular moment.
Because
he's a butcher. And this was not a first-time thing. That was the high-leverage instance of him being a butcher at shortstop, but he's just not a major league shortstop. I thought this in the regular season. They lost in four in the division series, but this was not anything new in October. He's been a bad defensive shortstop since the day he put on Philly's pinstripes, and it's only gotten worse. I don't know how they're putting him back at shortstop next season. Shout out to our guy, Tim Kelly, who asked Dave Dombrowski the tough questions at the end of season press conference.
Yeah, that was great.
Grilling him, and Dave Dombrowski tried to give him the old, well, I don't know what metrics you're using, and Tim gave him every defensive metric in the book that he's seriously declined at. I think it's horrible that they're doing it, and it's going to cost them more games next year.
And let's face it, the only reason they're not is because they don't want to ask a $300 million player to change positions. That's the only reason.
To the last caller's point, like I understand. I'm not one of these people who says, like, oh, you got to make $300 million athletes do this or do that, and so what if they hold out? Then I'm not In this particular case, what is Trey Turner going to do if you move him off shortstop? He's going to not show up to spring training? Like he's going to quit the team? He's going to demand a trade to somewhere where they'll play him at shortstop?
I'd love that.
He's going to demand a trade to somewhere where they demand him to play shortstop? Like, what leverage does he have at the moment?
I would love him to demand a trade. I can't stand watching Trey Turner.
I know you can't stand
Trey Turner. The dude stinks. I mean, he is just so overrated.
Your hatred for Trey Turner is what you thought your ultimate dislike for Bryce Harper was going to be. Like you came in with a bit of a skeptical eye on $330 million man Bryce Harper.
Yeah, but Bryce has backed it up.
You've ultimately deflected that energy to the next guy they give a $300 million deal to. Because Trey Turner, much more deserving of that hate.
Yeah, Trey Turner is overrated, and that was a terrible contract. Worst contract in baseball. Let's go to Carl in Maple Shade. What's up, Carl?
Yo, guys. Happy holidays to you guys, man.
Same to you.
You had a previous caller, Al. Well, 10 seconds of that, I got 2 points that I'd like to get to, but Detroit would have never beat the Eagles this week. They're not going to beat the Eagles if they have to play in their stadium, and they're never going to beat us at home. I saw what Detroit was this week, and they can't beat the Eagles anywhere they play, as far as I'm concerned.
This is, I think, a perfect case. You, Tom, like, it was a thing. It was a national showcase Thanksgiving game bias. So everyone watched every play of the Lions game yesterday, and we saw one of their worst games of the year where they escaped with a win. Right? If they had played this particular game in week 5 on Red Zone or against the Eagles game, no one in Philadelphia would have this opinion of the Lions if they then steamrolled the Bears yesterday.
They started out to steamroll them. But they didn't have what it took to put them away.
No,
I know,
but I'm just saying if you watched every Lions game, like if every Lions game was on national TV and we watched them all, we'd see that more often than not, they have steamrolled their opponents this year.
Yeah, I mean, I got to be honest. I mean, that was the only game that I could really guide in on. The other point I had was this thing with Nick, I think. He's blended so well with his coordinators. They wouldn't be excelling the way they are if Nick wasn't a good head coach. He's doing the right thing by them, the right thing by the team, and I think he's guiding the ship in the right direction, and I don't think anybody wants to play the Eagles right now.
Oh, I agree, Carl. What do you have for something that's aged well?
Cheese.
Keys?
Cheese.
Oh, cheese. That's the second person to say cheese.
Has been
Thanks,
said.
Carl. Appreciate it.
But
man.
Cheese gets moldy. What? Like, two people have said cheese.
Yeah, I thought he said keys.
And I told Carl on the phone, I said, that's been said. He said that to me.
This qualifies.
In this last segment, just a producing disaster for
no,
Fran.
No, it's you. No, I've been doing my job.
Awful.
Is Fran a good game manager?
Fran is going down on my producer list. Now, you mentioned Al Ashland and I were on together. We'll do Jalen Hurts quarterback list. We also started doing a producer list.
Oh, can I quickly? We have a minute and a half to go here. Can you quickly hear it?
They shift. Fran is always relatively low.
Okay.
You're usually relatively low.
I was number two on Ashland's list. Don't even try.
Yeah. And then
who's coming in at one on the producer rankings here? I'm just curious.
I don't know. Now,
is it
now
Luke Nichols because of his deep voice?
I do like Luke's voice. Sometimes Justin's a little too positive.
Morgenstein or DeRozio?
Yeah, Morgenstein.
Okay, a little too positive?
A little too positive sometimes.
Well, any shine of positivity on your show is considered to be too positive,
Caleb's rising on my list.
Because he's negative like
does
you?
Good, does a good job.
Okay.
Yeah. Caleb like rising up the list? Yeah, but you two are always relatively low.
I assume so. That just means we're doing our job well.
Exactly. but that'll do it for us today. Fun show, Buzz. Good job. When are you back on the air?
Loved it. So I will be back on my usual Sunday overnight, Sunday at 2 a.m., Sunday from 2 a.m. to 6:30 a.m., getting you ready. I'll be the first voice you hear, second voice you hear after Jolly, on an Eagles game day. Looking forward to it.
There you go. So Buzz will be back on Saturday into Sunday. I'll be on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. with Al Morganti, and then for the Eagles halftime show of Eagles Ravens on Sunday afternoon. Thank you to Francisco Rojas doing a great job producing, to Bam and Upper Darby for the pizza. Appreciate it, Bam. Stay tuned. Black Friday football coming up next right here, Sports Radio 94 WIP.